Going to continue with the Mishnah Vav. So starting at the beginning, Yoshua ben Prachya, Venitei ha'arbeili kiblu mehem. Yoshua ben Prachya, Omer, Asei lecha rav, make for yourself a rav, uknei lecha chaver, and acquire a friend, vehevei donis kol ha'adam lekatzchus, and judge everybody favorably. So again, we'll first speak about the Abarbanel's commentary to this Mishnah, and then we're probably not going to get more than that today. Can I just ask the men who are sitting here to sit in the men's section? We have Hadoras Anoshim here. Okay, sorry. Okay, so we finished the preface of the Abarbanel of who Yoshua ben Prachya was and what era he lived. So he says like this, that these two elaborated on what came before them. Right, they came to qualify and explain what was said before them. Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, who were their mentors. Since Yossi ben Yoezer said that when it comes to Limud HaTorah, your house should be open wide and be a meeting place for the Chachamim, so you may think that you should therefore learn from all of them. He said, then you get very confused, because this one learns like this, and this one a little bit differently, and they many, many disagreements when it comes to Torah. So therefore, Yoshua ben Prachya said that it's not good for a person to learn from too many different people at the same time. Because, again, their thinking is different, and you get all confused and mixed up. And therefore, he brings down, interesting, this is an aside, he brings down a quote from Seneca, the philosopher. Okay, in case you're not familiar, Seneca was not a frum Jew. Okay. Wasn't a Jew at all. Okay, and yet the Abarbanel saw fit to quote him because there is a klal which the Meiri says all the time: Kablu es ha'emes mimisha amram. Receive the truth from whoever said it, whether he's a goy, a yid, whatever it may be. If he said something right and it's true, then you can quote such a person. So he quotes Seneca, the philosopher, and who says the following: that a person who learns or hears from many teachers, right, is like a stomach that has many, many different kinds of foods in it at the same time and can't digest them all properly. So in order to be able to learn properly, you have to have one Rebbe who you receive Chochmah from. So even though, right, it's true, your house should be a place, a meeting place of the wise, but personally pick out one Rebbe that you should learn from. Okay, that you shouldn't get confused. Okay. Before we go into the, there is a qualification of that too, because that seems to contradict another Mishnah. The Abarbanel brings this down a little bit later, and that is that the Mishnah says, "A zeu chacham halo made me call adam." Who is a chacham? Someone who learns from everyone. So, the Abarbanel says that that means the following. He says that you should learn different subjects from different rebbeim, but one rebbe at a time. In other words, he brings down there, if you're learning mathematics, learn it from one teacher. If you're learning Gemara, learn it from a different teacher. You're learning Tanakh, you can learn it from a different teacher. There are different rabbonim that specialize or that you can learn that subject from them specifically. So you can learn from many Rabbanim, but don't learn the same subject from many Rabbanim. Okay. That's how the Abarbanel answers this question. I think there are other possible answers also. One is not that in practice you should learn from everybody, but you should be prepared to learn from anybody. Who's a chacham? A person who wants chachma and is willing to pick up anything from anybody. Doesn't mean that he's learning from many, many different people at the same time that they're his Rebbe. He has one Rebbe, but he hears something from this one or he hears something from that one. They're not his teachers, but he happens to hear something that they say. So he's willing to listen to that too. Okay, it's not talking about learning from many different people at the same time on a set path. We're talking about willing to learn something from anybody who has what to teach you. Okay. Now, why does it say "asei l'charav"? Right, make for yourself a rav. So the Abarbanel says what it means is the following: that it could be this person is not really fit to be your rav. He's not the most qualified person that there is, but you need somebody to mentor you. And if you can't find somebody more qualified, then make somebody who is on a higher level than you, you make him into the rav. Even though intrinsically he may not be fit to be the rav, but you make him into your rav. You need somebody to guide you. So therefore, even if the person himself is not looking for talmidim, he's not making you a student, but you make him into the rav. And the reason, he says, is for a few reasons. So if the rav is there to teach you, right, as the Abarbanel also says, a second function, which we'll get to after we speak about this one, which we're probably not going to finish today. Another function of a rav is to give you information that he has spent years working on, right, learning or whatever. And if you would have to start from scratch, so you'd never be able to really learn everything as much as you could. So therefore it's good to learn from someone who's done the groundwork already, who can give over to you what, if you would have to do it on your own, would take years and years. This way you can get it and be able to learn other things. Benefit from the knowledge of other people. That's one idea of a rav, which we'll get to. Says the Abarbanel, though, is another idea. For that, you need somebody who's qualified, who has what to get knowledge to give you. But for the second, or the first purpose of a rav, he doesn't have to be that qualified on his own. You can make him into your rav. What's the purpose of that? To give you advice, guidance. Okay, for advice, you don't need, and this is not what the Abarbanel says, this is from now on my interpretation of this Abarbanel. Again, if the purpose of the teacher, of the rav, is to impart knowledge, then he has to be somebody who intrinsically can impart that knowledge. But if the purpose of the rav is to give you etzah, to give you advice and direction and guidance, then intrinsically he does not have to be that much greater than you. But you have to designate him as your rav, as your mentor, as your guider, as your the one who gives you advice. That patterns itself after a chazal. Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he came to create man, asked advice from the angels if he should create man or not. And purpose of that, God didn't need advice. Purpose was to teach us. Many times HaKadosh Baruch Hu functions in a way that we can understand in order to teach us how to function. And therefore, we are supposed to learn from that it is proper to ask advice even from someone lower than you, even someone who knows less than you, just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked advice from the angels who are infinitely less than him. There's no one who is so infinitely less than me that I can't ask advice from. Okay. So the question now is, what's the purpose of that? Right. According to the Barbanel again, you're making somebody your Rav who intrinsically is not really fit to be your Rav, but it's kedai to have somebody, if you can't find anybody else, to guide you and to mentor you for the sake of giving you advice. Which echoes the fact that a person should ask advice even from someone lower than him. The question is, what's the purpose of that? It would seem on the surface that you ask advice from somebody lower than you to respect them, out of respect for them, to give them a little respect and a little chizuk that you're asking advice even from them. You, the greater person, are asking advice from the lesser person. But the truth is, if you think about it, it's very condescending. It's not respectful at all. Right? Example, if I know something about automobiles and how they work and how to fix them if they stop working, which if you have the kind of cars I have, you have to know that kind of information. So, and I hear a noise in the motor of my car and I have the hood up and I'm trying to find out where the noise is coming from and what it means and what the problem is. And my mother-in-law, Aleha Shalom, would have passed by, who I don't think knew which side of the car the motor was on. And I say to her, to be, you know, respectful, Ma, what do you think? Right? You have any idea about, maybe give me some advice about what to do about this noise? Now, that's condescending, because she's going to know I'm making fun of her. She doesn't have an idea. If I don't know what's going on, how in the world does she know? So what in the world value is there going to be of asking her advice? Her advice is meaningless, and if I'm trying to do it just to give her a little covet, it's absurd. And the male is not covet at all. It's very, very disrespectful to put somebody on the spot like that when you know that they don't have an idea of what to tell you. So why in the world would I want to ask advice from somebody who knows less than I do? Somebody who knows more, I understand that. But somebody knows less? Is that a lower level than me? We can understand this same question on a medrash. The medrash says that Avraham Avinu, when he was given the mitzvah of Bris Milah, went to ask advice from his three friends, Onner, Eshkol, and Mamre. And in the end, Mamre is the one who gave him good advice, and therefore God appeared to Avraham in Mamre's portion because of the advice he gave him concerning the Bris Milah. Few questions. First of all, Avraham Avinu needed advice. God gave him a mitzvah. What does he have to ask advice for? Do the mitzvah. What are you asking? If you're asking advice already, why ask three goyim? You have a Rosh Hashiva, Shemin Aver, the yeshiva, go ask them. Eliezer was his prized Talmud, ask him. He asked the three Bali Bris Avraham, his three friends, Goyish friends, advice. What are they going to tell him? So I saw an interesting commentary on this Rashi that says that that's not what it means. It says that God appeared to Avraham in the portion of Mamre, who shenosan lo eitza al hamila. He's the one who gave him advice concerning Bris Milah. So this commentary says it's not the way to read it, because it's absurd to think that Avraham Avinu needed advice if God gave him a mitzvah. But the word should be read otze. The Gemara says that there is a medication that's put on the Bris Milah to help stop the bleeding, and it's called otze. So it says, "Hu shenosan lo otze al hamila." He provided him with this medication. It's cute, but that's not what it means. How do I know? Because Rashi didn't make this up. Rashi sources are in Midrashim, and there's a Midrash. that speaks about Avraham Avinu going to get advice from his three friends. It tells exactly what he asked them to. So the Medrash says like this. Medrash is a Medrash Tanchuma in the end of Parshas Lech Lecha. And the Medrash says like this. When God gave Avraham Avinu the mitzvah Bris Milah, he went to ask advice from his three friends, Onner, Eshkol, and Mamre. He went to Onner and he said to him, what do you think? And Onner said the following. You are committing suicide. You're an old man. This operation is life-threatening. You're not going to survive. So, seemingly, it's not something to do. It's pikuach nefesh. He left Onner. He went to Eshkol. He said to him the same thing. He said, look, even if you survive the operation, your life's still going to be in danger. Because you just conquered four kings that conquered five kings. So they weren't any pushover. They have a lot of relatives who would love to take revenge on you. If you put yourself in this vulnerable position of circumcising your entire household, then you're going to be very vulnerable, like later on Shimon and Levi did to Shechem. Put them in that situation, then went and slaughtered them. You're going to be in a situation where you're going to be very vulnerable, and the relatives of those kings that you conquered are going to come and take revenge. So even if you survive the operation, it's still life-threatening. He left Eshkol and he went to Mamre. Mamre said to him the following. God has a good track record with you. He saved you from the fiery furnace. He let you overcome the four kings. If I were you, I'd do what God tells you. And just the same way that God got you out of the fiery furnace and he saved you from the four kings, he will see to it that you survive this operation and that you're not harmed by the relatives of these kings either. So Mamre gave him good advice and the other two, the Chora, gave him bad advice. So a few questions. First of all, now we have a Medrash that says openly that Avraham Avinu went to seek the advice of his friends. So now the question comes back. What did he need advice for altogether? Secondly, why these three people? Why not? There were greater people in the world to ask advice from. Why these three? Thirdly, if he's already asking advice, two of them told him not to do it. One of them told him yes. So why didn't he go after the bro? Why didn't he listen to the two? And why didn't he listen to the first one? He went to ask the first one advice, ask him. Okay, he wanted to hear what the other ones had to say, fine. But now that he heard all three, two out of three said, don't do it. So why did he do the mitzvah? Elamai, ask advice, but don't listen to it. That's what it means. And the truth is, you can ask the same question by God. The Rabban Hashem taught us to ask advice even from someone lower than us. Why? Because he asked the angels. Do you know what it says over there when God asked the angels? God asked the angels, shall I create man? So it says in various Midrashim, one Midrash says, the angel said, nah, bad idea. Mo Adam, mo enosh ki siskirenu. Uben Adam v'tachshaveyu. What's man that you should consider him? Forget about it. Okay, so that's one Midrash. Another Midrash says that the various angels gave different opinions. The angel of Emes said, don't create man, he's kulo sheker, he's full of lies. The angel of Shalom said, don't create him, because he's constantly fighting. So two angels said, forget it. Then the angel of Chesed said, create him, because they do kindnesses one to the other. So what did God do? Two angels said not. One said yes. So he shouldn't have not created man. You know what God did? He took Emes, threw him down to the ground. Now it was one against one. God broke the tie. So that's what we're supposed to learn. Ask advice from somebody lower than you, but don't listen to it. And that's what Avraham Avinu went to ask advice. He didn't listen to the advice. What did he do? He shopped around till he heard what he wanted to hear. Right? And that's how people mostly follow advice. Now, I've been advised. I have a Rav told me this after he asked 28 other Rabbanim who told me something different. So what kind of advice is that? And what do we learn from that? If Avraham Avinu ignored the advice. In addition, why weren't Onner and Eshkol punished for giving him bad advice? Why was Mamre rewarded for giving him good advice? The other two should have been punished for giving him bad advice. And lastly, if Mamre is to be rewarded, why was his reward that God appeared to Avraham in his portion? Why is that a fitting reward for giving good advice? Why couldn't you have gotten some other reward? To answer all of this, I want to explain a little bit what the concept of advice is. What is the importance of asking advice? The Meiri says that every person is biased, very subjective. We have desires that color our vision, and when you're faced with an issue that you have to make a decision, you think you are making an objective decision and considering all of the aspects, pro and con, until you come to a conclusion and a decision, this is what's the proper thing to do. But it doesn't work like that. Because since we are biased, and everybody has a hidden agenda, whether they know it or not, so when you have an issue to decide, right, I'll give an example. You have to decide if you should move from where you live, and if so, where. You have two options, where to move. So you have three possibilities. Should I move altogether? If I do move, should I move to this neighborhood or that neighborhood? And you think that now you're going to research the Indian and decide if it's a good time to move, get money for your house, right? If you'll be able to make friends in the new thing, what kind of neighborhood is it? What is better for you? A million different considerations. And you think that you are deliberating, investigating, and finally coming to a proper decision. You know what's happening under the surface? You really deep down want one of those options to be the one that's going to be. Right? You're attracted to that, whether it's good or not. And because of that, when you investigate and deliberate, you're not seeing the thing as it really is. You see all the positives of the option that you deep down want to be, and all the negatives of the options that you don't want to be. And that's a normal person. Everybody is biased. Everybody has subjectivity. Everybody has desires that, even if they're not conscious, subconsciously, you would rather this option to be the option. Once that's the case, then hashochad ya'aver eini pikrin. It's bribery. What you want is bribing you to see the situation the way you want to see it, not necessarily the way it really is. And therefore, every person needs to ask advice, not because you don't have all the information. Could be you have all the information. But you need advice because you need somebody objective to be able to see that same information from an objective standpoint rather than a subjective standpoint. Because what will the person give you the advice to say? Here are the options. Here are what's really in front of you, pro and con. Now go make a decision. He may not make the decision for you, but he'll give you enough objective information to really be able to come to an objective, proper conclusion, not a conclusion that is preconceived because of what you'd like the solution to be. So therefore, a person would like to make a decision, and sometimes you make the decision on what you'd like it to be, not on what it really is. In addition, the person who's giving you advice can point out to you all the various factors in a very objective way, and you won't miss then the negatives of the thing you want and the positives of the thing you don't want. And then you'll really be able to deliberate. That is the Meiri. So it comes out that the purpose of Eitzah is not necessarily to get information. Sometimes, yes. I don't have information. I need information. But it's more to be able to get a objective picture of what it is that you have to make a decision on. Based on that, I like to explain the following Gemara. The Gemara says that the organ, the physical organ in the body that corresponds to the spiritual organ of decision making is the kloyos, the kidneys. Kloyos yoatzos. The kidneys are the source of advice. You have a left kidney and a right kidney, and therefore you have, when it comes to advice, the pro and the con, the negative and the positive, or whatever. Now, this does not mean that if Rahman Litzlan, you have one kidney, somehow you only have one kind of advice, left or right. You can live on one kidney. It doesn't mean that the physical kidneys do this. Right? Just like the physical heart doesn't have emotions or whatever, it's just a pump. But every physical organ corresponds to a spiritual organ that corresponds, that is connected to it, whatever. So the physical kidneys correspond to spiritual kidneys, and they don't depend if you have one or two. We always have two spiritual kidneys, even if you take out one of the physical ones. It's just the neshama is built the same way the body is built, or more correctly, the body is built the way the neshama is built. The body reflects physically how the neshama is built spiritually. So the portion of the spiritual body that gives advice, or that aids a person in giving advice or getting advice, is the kidneys. Now it's interesting that there's a very big correlation, according to what I just told you, between the physical function of the physical kidneys and the spiritual function of the spiritual kidneys. How so? There's a pasuk in Mishle. Pasuk says, Mayim amukim eitzah belevish. Advice is in the heart like deep waters. The ish chacham yidlena. And a wise person can draw from those waters, draw up the advice, get the proper advice. So advice is compared to water. Deep water, it needs to be raised to the surface. You have to find that water and bring it to the surface. Okay, meaning that it's there. Everybody has the right advice within them. But they color it, they pollute it, and they need to bring it out pure to be able to see what's there. So the advice is not so much to tell you something you don't know. That's only one kind of advice. But the advice is to draw out what's there, but to let you see it, to let you get at it. Okay. What's the function of the physical kidneys? It's like a filter. They filter out the poisons that poison the liquids that come into the body, and eject them from the body, and let the pure water then nourish the body. That is the function of the kidneys. That's the function of advice. Advice is to take out all the pollutants in that water that is the advice, but all the things that corrupt it because of your subjectivity and bias, take them out and leave the pure water. That is the function of an advisor, and that is the function of the kidneys. They go perfectly together. There's more than that, though. And that is, sometimes an advisor, okay, you go to a Rav, that's what we're talking about now, Rabbanim, we'll see that Chaveirim also can give advice. Friends can also give advice. If you go to a Rav for advice, if he's really the kind of Rav that knows how to give advice, he most of the time doesn't tell you what to do. He tells you what your options are, and makes you able to have a objective, intelligent choice. Sometimes he'll do it by telling you information that you don't know, and then you have no choice. Right? You go for a halacha, you go for a psak, so then you're asking the Rav for his expertise, you're asking for his Torah knowledge. Then you don't really have a choice. He doesn't tell you unless there's different possibilities. But if you go for advice for life questions, not for psak halacha, then a real advisor doesn't tell you this is what you have to do. A real gadol tells you, look, here is the issue, here are the various pros and cons, right? I'm telling you, this is the negative, this is the positive, now make a decision. But he doesn't make the decision for you. We are not people who relinquish our free choice. What we have in this world is free choice. If you relinquish your free choice to somebody else, then you're balking at your responsibility in this world to make choices. Let somebody else make the choice. The purpose of the advisor is to guide you in making an intelligent choice, where you see the issue 100% objectively, what's there in front of you, not to tell you what to do. And people can be very selective in what they want to ask advice about. I remember that in Miami, there was a school, won't mention that had a Choshva Rav that ran the people of the school followed. Okay, he wasn't in Miami, he was somewhere else, a big Rebbe, that the people of the school was that branch of Hasidus, and the Rebbe made decisions. Okay. So somebody who was not from that Hasidus was on the board of the school. And then I found out that he quit the board. So I asked him, why did you quit? What happened? He said, I'll tell you what happened. So I'm on the board of this school. And we, a few months ago, had to make a decision whether we should buy a big bus. We had to buy a new school bus. We could buy a bus with 70 seats or a bus with 40 seats. And at that time, we didn't need the bus with the 70 seats, and it cost a lot more. We only needed a bus, but the 40 seats would have been just enough. So the question was, should we look ahead of the school growing and have a little emunah and bitachon that it's going to grow, and eventually we're going to need the 70-seat bus, so it's worth putting the money in, or should we skimp and save and get the 40-seat bus? That was the question. So somebody got up and said, we have to ask the Rebbe. What should we do? And sure enough, the Rebbe said, get the 70-seat bus, even though it costs a little bit more money, but have emunah and bitachon, the school's going to grow, you're going to need that bus. Fine. So it wasn't questioned anymore. The Rebbe said, buy the bus. They bought the bus. So a few months later, we had another issue brought up to the board. They wanted to fire a few teachers who had been there for years, but there were complaints and whatever, and it was a little bit too expensive to keep them all. So they were discussing to fire these teachers. Obviously, these teachers made their parnosa from the school. So it's a very, very important decision either way, either for the school's sake or for these people's parnosa, these people's individual sake. So you were dealing with a very, very weighty issue. And it went back and forth. So this guy innocently said, well, why don't we ask the Rebbe? If we ask the Rebbe if we should buy a bus with 40 seats or 70 seats, then wouldn't this be proper to ask the Rebbe? And one of the people on the board who was from that Hasidic sect said, those are not the kind of questions we ask the Rebbe. So he said, if those aren't the kind of questions you ask the Rebbe, only about buying buses and not whether to affect somebody's life and don't be dealing in a foster fire somebody or not, then I'm not interested in being on a board like this. So we're very selective in what kind of advice, when we ask advice or whatever, and what we listen to also. So, but it's important to ask advice even from somebody who has less information, because part of the purpose of asking advice is not to get information. It's to get an objective view of the issue that you have to make the decision on. Okay. In even more than that. Sometimes the question is not what to do. You have no choice. You have to do. Okay? For instance, let's go back to the question of moving. Okay? You have no choice. Okay? Your neighborhood changed and you must get out. They're throwing you out. They're raising all the houses to build an apartment buildings. And you have to move. So you have no choice. You're not going to ask advice, should I move or not? You're going to move one way or the other, the bulldozer is going to bulldoze your house while you're in it. So you get to move, no problem. Also, where you have to move is not an issue either. You can only afford to be in one place. You can't, it's impossible. There's no place about that you would like to move, maybe to this neighborhood, but there's no houses there. And they're so expensive you can't afford it. So the only place open to you to move is place X. So what should you ask advice? You have no choice. There's still an idea to ask advice. The Rashba says that, the Gemara says that they used to go ask advice from the Sanhedrin, from the Urim the Tumim, if they would want to go into battle in the time of David HaMelech. Should they make this war or not? For economic reasons they made wars. They needed Parnassa, right? So they had to go conquer places and that kind of war. It wasn't somebody attacked them or they were threatening them or whatever. And it's permissible to make that a Milchemes Rishus. So they used to go ask the Sanhedrin and they used to go the Orim Vitumim, should they go, whatever. After all of that, they went to Achitophel, it says, to ask advice. So what kind of advice? You already went to the Sanhedrin, the Urim, you're going into battle. What in the world advice can you ask? Says the Rashba, sometimes advice is not to know what to do, but to know how to do it. With what intention? You can do the same thing in two different ways, and one way is a mitzvah, one way is an aver. For instance, the example I always like to give, that doesn't apply to women that much, but since it's an example I like to give, and I am a creature of habit, I'm going to tell you the example that I'm not going to think of another one that has more connection to you. Two people get up Shabbos morning ready to go to shul, and they say that they hope that the Baal Koreh, the first one says, doesn't make mistakes when he reads the Torah, because if he makes mistakes I'm going to have to correct him, right? And I have no choice, so I hope he reads it perfectly so I won't have to embarrass him, insult him by correcting him, but I want to be Yotze Kriyas HaTorah. If I don't correct him, there's nobody else in shul who follows, and I won't be Yotze. Second person gets up Shabbos morning. He says, oh, I heard that my enemy is laning this week. I just hope he makes a lot of mistakes so I can really insult him and show him up. Both of them go to shul. They listen to the Torah reading, and the Baal Koreh makes a mistake. The first person jumps on him and corrects him. And the second person jumps on him and corrects him. Did they both do the same thing? No. The first person's intention is to fulfill the mitzvah of hearing Kriyas HaTorah. He got a mitzvah for correcting the Baal Koreh. The Baal Koreh knows that if he makes mistakes, he's going to have to correct them. Second person has an aveira. He is using the mitzvah of Talmud Torah as an excuse to insult this man. That's his intention. They both did the exact same thing, but the intention made it a mitzvah for this one and an aveira for that one. So it's not necessarily only what you do, but it's also what your intention is. So therefore it's an idea to ask advice also to know, what should I intend? What should be my feeling? Not just what am I supposed to do? One more point. And that is, in order to give advice, you have to be able to divest yourself of your bias and your subjectivity, otherwise you're not helping the person at all. And therefore, if somebody comes to ask me advice, and I say the following, what would I do if I had that issue to decide? Then I am totally puzzled, unfit for giving advice. And my advice is meaningless, for a few reasons. One reason is that what is good for a person to do depends on their circumstances. What's good for one person may be completely not good for another person. Right? Give me an absurd example. Two people come to the Rav to ask, should I move to this place or not? Now the place is not a great place of Yiddishkeit. Okay? There are very negative influences there, but there are positive influences also. Person A, who's asking advice, comes from a place where he's living amongst Goyim and non-frum Yidden completely, and there's no Yiddishkeit at all. Okay? The child is moving up a step to a place where at least there's some other frum Yidden. Yeah, there's a lot of bad influences, but there's a lot of good influences too. Where you are now, there are no good influences. Person B is coming from Yerushalayim, from Bnei Brak. He wants to know, should he move to this place? So if you were the advisor, what would you advise these people? The first one I would say move, and the second one I would say not move. No, because the circumstances are completely different. So what is the proper thing for each one is completely different. Therefore, if I, the advisor, somebody comes to me who lives in Hudson Plots, where there's not one frum yid, and he's asking me, should I move to a place where there's a minion of frum yid, but taka's a lot of mechalei Shabbos or whatever, my advice to him is, yes, yeah, step up. But if I say, what would I do? I live in Bnei Brak. What would I do if I had that shaila? I wouldn't go there with a 10-foot pole. So what does it help him to tell him what I would do? What I would do has no connection to him. I'm a different circumstances. In addition, if I say, what would I do? I have my bias, my subjectivity. I have the things that give me shochat, that bribe me. So if I start thinking about what I would do, then I'm coloring it with my subjectivity. So what have I gained? What has he gained? Took away his subjectivity, gave my subjectivity. Therefore, somebody comes for advice, you have to say the following. If I would be him, with all of his circumstances, and without his bias, what would I do? I have to be able to project myself into his shoes, his circumstances, but I'm not him, so I don't have his bias. Now I can give him advice. Okay, those are the rules of giving advice. Mirtz Hashem, I'm not going to be here next week or the week after that. In 3 weeks, Be'ezras Hashem, we will use what we learned today, probably review it quickly, and answer all the questions we asked at the beginning of the Shiur.